There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
You know, we are so very close to the debut of the drinking T-shirt. It drinks pretty good, don't it? T-shirt. I'm so excited, Dalton. We are very close. We're on the precipice of having that from our friends over at the Nutria Rodeo released to all of us to be able to get our own, to be able to wear that around. I don't know. You know, they said that would be like a shirt you would wear to the 1065 Music Festival. I know that's been canceled for this year, and there's discussion of maybe something in the interim. They were discussing Bayfest the other day too. Maybe something comes back. We need something even before Mardi Gras. Now that shirt will be perfect for Mardi Gras, but even before that, some kind of real big event where you could model that shirt around. Listen, when it's out, I'll tell you all more about it. But it's a shirt that is that's attached to the show opener of Midday Mobile, which is what this is. If you're new, hey, y'all, I'm Sean, live local talk over the next couple of hours. Lots of stuff to do on today's show, and you're a big part of the show as well. Phone number, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. There's a... And we'll talk some political stories, some national stories, some state stories. Also, something pretty big is getting ready to happen this weekend. A race, a canoe, kayak, paddleboard race through the state of Alabama. Now, this is I'm jealous of the people doing this who can get the time off to do this, but a pretty incredible deal. Great Alabama 650. I interviewed Greg Wingo with that group earlier this year. We're going to replay that interview, kind of set up, because this is a race that starts up in northeast Alabama, and they will finish right here at Fort Morgan. I'm talking about the entirety of the state by water. And they got 10 days to do it. We'll get to that interview coming up in just a little bit on today's show. Plus, vaping. Yes, we'll talk more about the changes that are proposed here to eliminate flavored vape. Listen, I have a teenager. I am concerned with said teenager doing a lot of things, vaping one of them. Absolutely. Is this the job of government to step in and tell somebody that it's not the substance they're banning? And we're going to get Dalton to talk a little bit, too, about these cases of health issues. They're not probably associated with the actual legal vaping going on. But for the government to come in and say, you can have this product, you can have wine, but you cannot have Cabernet Sauvignon. You can have the Pinot Noir, but you can't have... I mean, they're talking about the flavors on this, and the president's behind this as well. I want to get into this and get y'all's opinions on that as well. So that's on the way. But before we go any further, a top story I saw today that I thought was pretty darn interesting. A story from WFLA down in Tampa, which, by the way, home of my buddy J.B. Buino, of course, who was with News 5 for a long time. He's down there killing it, like in a good way, in Tampa. The story here, could we survive another planet? Now, it doesn't survive on, it just, could we survive another planet? Astronomers say it might be possible on a planet called K2-18-B. Okay. What they mean is, could we survive on another planet? It's known as Super Earth, and for good reason. It's 8 times the size of Earth. Astronomers have been able to look at its atmosphere, and they have found water vapor and temperatures that could support life. How cool is this? They also saw signs of hydrogen and helium, which are two of the most abundant elements in the universe. The planet outside our atmosphere, so it's technically an exoplanet. Outside our atmosphere? Like, I'm all jazzed up about this story, but this is written, like, by a second grader. And I'm not sure. every planet other than ours is outside our atmosphere. Do they mean our solar system, Dalton? You see the story? The runner, WKRG, linked it. I mean, they didn't write it. The planet is outside our atmosphere. Hey, how about this? The moon is outside our atmosphere, too. How about that? They got to be... Do they mean solar system? Do they mean galaxy? It's like this exciting story for a nerd like me, except I get stuck in the fact that it's written... So poor. Okay, I'm going to guess. Let's just. Well, the galaxy might be. Let's go ahead and just say solar system. Okay, I've got to redact and edit the story as we go. The planet is outside our solar system. I guess they are correct in saying the planet's outside our atmosphere too. So's everything else. So technically, it's called an exoplanet. But don't start getting excited about planetary relocation. It's 110 light years away in the Leo constellation. So that would definitely put it outside our galaxy. Regardless, scientists are pretty excited. They said the discovery gets them one step closer to answer the question scientists have always been chasing, is Earth unique? Which is a whole like Friday night, we're all sitting on the front porch discussion. The odds of Earth being the only planet out there that has this formula for life. And I would like to just be bubbly and excited about this story, but it was written poorly. Let's find the story from like maybe science.com or somebody else has it. But yeah, there you go. So they've got another planet that they think has the makings of a sustainable for humans atmosphere, and it's huge. So there we go. By the way, I'm claiming at least like one of the continents on that new planet, okay? I already got it. It's mine. 1212 FM Talk 106.5. Hey, coming back, the Great Alabama 650 race starts this weekend. Wait till you hear about this. It's cool stuff. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
So they said the planet, this new super planet, is outside our atmosphere. Go figure, huh? How about that? All right, 1216, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday Eve. Glad to have you along. Hey, this is an interview I did a few months ago when this first rolled out about this Great Alabama 650. Great Alabama 650 canoe, kayak, paddleboard race that takes you from one end of the state of of Alabama out to Fort Morgan. $22,000 in prizes in this thing, and it's a 10-day paddle, 650 miles. Did this interview a few months ago, but I want to replay it because the race starts Saturday, and it ends up coming right here down through the Delta into Mobile Bay out to Fort Morgan. This is my interview with Greg Wingo from a few months ago about the Great Alabama 650. Come by you in a race that is epic. I think, you know, that word gets thrown around so often out here, but I think in this case, you can talk about this race being an epic race. Alabama Scenic River Trail has their Great Alabama 650 coming up in September. Now, what is that 650? Well, we'll ask Greg Wingo more about that. He joins us now. Hey, thanks for your time, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
The Great Alabama 650 what?
650 miles of paddling. It is the longest paddle race in the United States, and racers are coming from all over the world to tackle our water and see if they can be the winner.
You know, we're blessed with this. Obviously, people can say, look no further than the seal of the great state of Alabama, and you look at all the rivers on there. So we are blessed with so many rivers, and that's something celebrated through Alabama Scenic River Trail. So we'll back up for a second, too, and tell people about the Alabama Scenic River Trail. Even if you're not talking about competing in a tournament or a race here, there's a lot of ways for folks to get out and enjoy the rivers in the state.
That's exactly right. You know, we really are, like you said, we're really blessed to have a large amount of water here in the state of Alabama. In fact, we have over 5,300 miles of paddable water, mapped paddable water in the state of Alabama. It makes us the number one state in the country for mapped paddable water. So, adventure enthusiasts, paddle enthusiasts, people that just love being out on the water in general, can all have plenty of opportunities and places throughout the state to go to get on lots of different types of water.
Yeah, and we'll put those links up as well, but AlabamaScenicRiverTrail.com, you can go there. And it was great when y'all launched this because those of us that are paddling enthusiasts had cobbled together either stories from folks in our home water is one thing, but you know, if you want to travel elsewhere in the state to go paddle, stories from folks up there, or there were a couple of paddling resource books that said, okay, here's one section from this put in to this tank out and all these things. But y'all put all this together in one place where we can look at the whole state. You got the mapping on there. This is really great, so people can plan a trip.
That's exactly right. You can go onto our website and you can find pretty much any type of water, any type of place to put in, take out, like you mentioned. All throughout the state, we have maps that give really good detail on where to go. And it all started a decade ago when we established the first 650 miles, the actual original Alabama Scenic River Trail. But since then, we've mapped so many more miles of waterways throughout the state.
So that's 650 miles, the Great Alabama 650. That is that's the racetrack for this race. Walk people through the geography from start to finish and what this race will entail.
Definitely. So the Great Alabama 650 is, like we said, a 650-mile long point-to-point race. So it's going to start up on Weiss Lake in northeast Alabama. It will continue down through the Coosa River, passing, you know, cities like Gadsden, on down through Childersburg and past Wetumpka and Montgomery. It meets up with the Alabama and continues on down. And then you hit the Mobile Bay eventually and finishes out at Fort Morgan. So you have a wide variety of types of water that racers or just paddling enthusiasts can take advantage of. It starts out with a little bit of white water, then you get a good amount of flat water with the different lakes that paddlers have to go through, and then, you know, the last 100 miles, I would say, is probably the most difficult portion of the race. You have that tidewater coming in into the delta region, and so you're dealing with a lot of, you know, headwinds and some commercial traffic and so it's quite a bit of a challenge, but we have, like I said, we have racers coming from all over the world that are excited to tackle this challenge and to vie for over $20,000 in money.
Wow. And I'm just thinking about the geography difference, too. You laid this out, whether you're talking about the Delta, but you're starting up there with the Whitewater section. You're at Lake Weiss up there, rocky, you know, foothills of the Appalachian Mountains there, the whole way to the sandy spit that we love right here in our own backyard at Fort Morgan. That's a big change. It kind of tells the story of the diversity in our state.
That's exactly right. You know, we were recently named the number one most biodiverse state in the country. And if we're just talking about from a waterway standpoint, we have probably the most diverse waterways in the entire country as well. So many different options and things to see and different types of water to tackle. And so, you know, it's really exciting that we're able to put on this event and get people from outside of the state to come here and experience it, but also, you know, showcase it to others in the state of Alabama that either may not be aware that this is something that we have going on, or just in general from a recreational standpoint, that there's so many different bodies of water in our state that people can take advantage of.
All right. And Greg, as a guy that's toying with the idea of maybe throwing my hat in the ring for this race, 650 miles in 10 days. Now, I was not a math major in college, but to me that looks like averaging 65 miles a day. 65 miles a day is a lot of paddling.
It is. It is a lot of paddling. And I think there are definitely endurance racers out there that is something that they feel very confident in being able to do. I think the biggest thing is you have to understand the geographical layout of our state and those bodies of water that you're going to be traveling, and you have to be able to wisely pick out where you can make up as much mileage as possible on a given day. There's certainly areas where you're going to get, you know, hit with those headwinds, like at the bottom of the state, that are going to make it a whole lot harder to move through. But yes, 65 miles a day is the average that you would need to get through in 10 days. We anticipate, though, that we'll see some finishers somewhere in that 7 to 8 day range.
Wow. Well, and we're talking about teams here too. Although I want to get into that, I think there are people who could do it single paddler, but it seems like to make this possible, you need somebody paddling at all times. One person sleeping, one person paddling.
Yeah, so we have three different categories. We have male solo, we have female solo, and then we have two-person team. It can be any gender. And so, you know, essentially a lot of these solo paddlers feel like they have a really good chance at finishing and or, you know, finishing a whole lot faster than we all think they can. You know, a lot of it is just dependent on how well they manage their sleep and their nutrition. That they're going to be taking in throughout the route. But, you know, those two-person teams, you're exactly right. You know, at some point, someone's probably going to have to snooze a little bit while the other person's kind of pulling the weight to get there to the end. But like I said, you know, everybody's probably going to have, you know, several crew members that are going to be there that are really the unsung heroes of any, you know, individual or team that's tackling this. You know, those are the people that are meeting them along the way and making sure that they're, you know, hydrating properly, getting their fuel, setting up camp for where they sleep along the way, and making sure that those racers can, you know, safely and quickly get to the finish.
Just joining us, talking to Greg Wingo with the Alabama Scenic River Trail and this great Alabama 650 race happening in September. Now, yeah, you were kind of describing like a paddler's version of a NASCAR pit crew, right? Those people that will be in support.
That's exactly right. Yeah, everybody, all the solo paddlers are required to have at least one crew member. The teams aren't required to have crew, but the vast majority of them will have crew. It makes it a whole lot more manageable if you have somebody helping you out logistically on the land and being able to do some of that work for you, get you set up so that you can just focus on paddling the entire way. And it is very similar to a pit crew style situation. They're trying to get their paddlers everything to them as quickly as possible and get them back out on the water so that they can win this thing.
You know, something you and I talked about before we went on here is that this is open to, well, at least three different types of paddled watercraft, right? Canoes, kayaks, and stand-ups, stand-up paddleboard.
Stand-up paddleboard.
What?
Well.
Really? I mean, I know that, you know, my kids think it's way cooler than any canoe or kayak, but if somebody finishes the race on a stand-up paddleboard, I'm going to be impressed.
Well, trust me, if somebody finishes this thing on a stand-up paddleboard, I'm going to be the first one there to give them a big hug because they are going to have, you know, suffered mightily to get there. But that said, there's quite a few endurance stand-up paddleboarders out there, and this is certainly something that, you know, they... You know, I think that they definitely see as a bucket list item to tackle. That said, racers are allowed to change out watercraft throughout the race. So you might start out on a stand-up paddleboard and then finish in a kayak. Perfectly doable. The only thing is it must be human-powered. It can't be motorized or sail power or even foot power. It does have to be, you know, it does have to be paddled. But they're allowed to change out as many different vessels as they want to based on the different types of water that they have to encounter.
This is an event, obviously, for the racers, but what about spectators? You talk about the portages that are going to happen and things. These are by some major hydroelectric dams. Is this something that people, if they're not competing, will come out and be able to see these racers?
Definitely. Yeah, the problem with the portages or the
and I guess we should explain. Yeah, we should explain portages for folks. A portage is what?
So a portage is an area in which the racers are going to have to get out of the water and go around some sort of obstacle. And so in our state, those obstacles are our hydroelectric dams, particularly located in the northern and central region of the state. So there are dams that caused us to be able to have Weiss Lake and Logan Martin Lake and Lay Lake and Mitchell and Jordan. And so as paddlers come to those dams, they have to portage around them. That's that term for taking out the boat out of the water, walking around to the other side of that dam, and putting back in the water. And so during that 10-day period, racers are on the clock the entire time. They're on the clock when they're paddling, when they're sleeping, when they're eating, anything they're doing. The only time that they're not on the clock is when they're going through one of those portage areas. And that gives them just a little bit of downtime to, you know, to be able to safely move around those hydroelectric dams. But spectators that want to watch the race, there are plenty of places throughout, particularly on those lakes that I mentioned. There's plenty of opportunity to be able to see those racers come through, especially in the early portions of the race when the racers are closer together. As the race moves on over the period of days, they're going to spread out quite a bit. But you could be standing at the waterfront in Montgomery and be able to see racers come through there. Certainly down along the eastern shoreline in the bay, you'll be able to see them, you know, hugging that shoreline as close as they possibly can to get around to Fort Morgan. So there's definitely going to be plenty of spectator opportunities. And we're going to have a map on our website that's tracking the racers throughout. So you'll be able to, you know, go on there, find a racer. You may even choose to, you know, treat it like you like horse racing and pick a racer and see if you're going to be the winner.
All right, so there we're kind of short on time here, but that you get the gist of the interview. That was my interview with Greg Wingo from the Alabama Scenic River Trail from a few months ago. That race starts Saturday and finishes up, well, for depends on the team. They have 10 days to finish and arrive at Fort Morgan. It is the world's longest, let's see, what did they say, the longest paddle race, world's longest annual paddle race right here in Alabama. Cool stuff. We'll talk more when we get back. Man.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, and the Little Friday edition, Thursday style here on Midday Mobile. And hopefully we can get Greg Wingo on live, maybe on tomorrow's show, as that Great Alabama 650 Canoe Race starts up in northeast Alabama and goes the whole way to Fort Morgan. They got 10 days, 650 miles of paddling. It's unreal. It's pretty exciting. And if they could, you know, if we knew there were going to be a lot of people finishing at one time, might be even worth heading over and hanging out at Fort Morgan and watching them come in. All right, I want to talk about a story that we've mentioned. We've had the news reports on it. We've mentioned a little bit in our discussions, just kind of matter of fact of what's going on. But I look here from emails and text. A lot of y'all have a lot more questions on this. So I figured why not go to the person that has been reporting this for our news partners at WKRG and ask those questions. Joined now by Katarina Lukatich from News 5. Hey, Kat.
Hey, Sean.
So this is the Alvin Ray Allen. First of all, I guess let's talk about the most recent thing. He's arrested and then he's released because of some kind of mix-up, and then he gets out again. Lay that out. What's happening here?
Yeah, it's very confusing on how it all happened. So his arrest stemmed from a grand jury indictment, and so the grand jury set a bond for him. The bond was $100,000 with a $10,000 cash component. So he has to come up with $10,000 in cash.
Okay.
Well, on Tuesday, when he went to go be released, the corrections officer processing that release did not see the $10,000 cash component part, so just let him out on a regular bond.
Have you in your work actually ever looked at these bonds before? Have you seen them?
We actually got sent what they were looking at on the bottom. From the sheriff's office, they sent us the page of what they were looking at, and you can see on the bottom where it says $10,000 cash component.
It seems like if somebody did that was their job. I don't know. I've never done that before, but it seems like you would catch that. And it's not the first time this has happened.
Right. Remember, 3 weeks ago, we had another suspected killer, Nathaniel Sebastian, was accidentally released on bond. That was from a different mistake, but so it's two times in the past 3 weeks. So they realized that mistake, that he wasn't supposed to be let out. So they went back, let his attorney know. He turned himself back into jail. But then a few hours later, came up with that $10,000 in cash, and so was re-released on the corrected bond.
Okay, so he has gone through that process. Now he's out with the $10,000 cash and the $100,000 bond. Let's talk about this case, because this is the one, this is what's gotten the emails sent to me. Somebody said, this is a 40-year-old cold case. How did they make this arrest? How did they make this arrest?
Yeah, well, from the family, they're telling us that it's DNA that's linked him to it. And while we haven't heard from police or prosecutors on what that process has been, my best guess is over the last few months, Mobile police have been getting grants to retest some old rape kits that have just been sitting on the shelves that have never gone out for processing. And in the past few months, we've seen cold case rape cases have made arrests, and it seems like maybe this one that was tested just was linked to a cold case murder as well.
Okay, so and so people understand, so these rape kits, these were taken at, obviously at the time that this happened 40 years ago and put on a shelf somewhere, and now that they have the money to do it, plus we have the technology, I guess, to do these links.
Right. You have to remember, in 1980, DNA wasn't a thing.
Right.
So they had this evidence that they just were never able to process with DNA. And then, you know, they just don't have the funding when you have current cases where these kits need to go out. And so that's what the grants were for. We're getting to test older kits to get other cases solved.
So they have, and just right now, just speculation, but you'd have a DNA sample from you would have this from the rape kit, and then you would have something on file from, in this case, let's say if it was the case, you would have it from Alvin Ray Allen, and they would, like, a computer matches it, or do you know how that works?
I've seen it on CSI. That's how it's done on CSI.
So this starts a bigger question. We're talking specifically about this case, but you bring up something, Katarina, here, that if this is a 40-year-old cold case, and it does turn out that it's a rape kit that was processed and they make this arrest, what does this mean for law enforcement going forward? This could be the start of a lot of this.
Yeah, and we have seen it. It's just that we don't see it. They're not as high-profile of cases as this, but I can, off the top of my head, think of maybe 5 cold case rape cases in the past year where we've asked Mobile police, and it's been because of a rape kit that was tested from a long time ago. And now these cases are starting to go to trial.
And so, I mean, this could be, and like you said, it has happened some, but this could be, the backlog is decades, right? I mean, this could mean a lot more of these stories.
Yeah, and especially as they go out, get processed, and then come back. Important note on Alvin Allen's release, though, that today pleaded not guilty to murder, but the judge also, since he made that $10,000 cash component, put additional restrictions on his release. So he's on electronic monitoring other than his home. He's only able to go to the 3 rental properties that he manages. He's a landlord. He's only allowed to go to those 3 rental properties and church, and that's it. But otherwise, he's on house arrest.
Ankle monitor?
Yes.
Okay. When's the next day in court? Did they set that?
Well, the trial date has been set for April 13th. He'll be back in court on October 3rd, but that's just for a status hearing. But the actual trial is set for April.
So, I mean, for me to understand this, if he doesn't violate this, then he's out of jail between now and April.
Yes.
Okay. This story, obviously, I mean, we're watching your reporting on this specifically in the case of Alvin Ray Allen, but you bring up something here with the discussion of these rape kits and these and the technology out there that has, I think, a lot of us wonder, wow, I mean, there could be, with this technology, it's I guess people who don't look at this every day like you don't realize there's this big backlog, right? That there are these there's information out there that could solve an old cold case that's just hasn't been processed. I mean, this is pretty amazing technology.
Right, because you have to think that, you know, DNA wasn't really a thing back then, so they would have never gone out for any sort of processing. And then you get to the point where there are just dozens and dozens, and you have newer cases that seem to be more of a, I don't want to say higher priority, but they're right there right now that go out and get processed.
Well, this is something we're going to be watching through your reporting, and I appreciate the update on this, and we'll talk again very soon.
Sure. Thanks, Sean.
As always, a pleasure. Katarina Lukatich from News 5. 40-year-old cold case. And think about this backlog, the number of these rape kits are out there, and they're going to be going through them and going through them. It's amazing. Technology is amazing. At 1243, FM Talk 106.5, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1248 FM Talk 1065. The Midday Mobile. Our phone number, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. All right, a couple stories here I want to get into, and we might get into the, probably tomorrow, the panhandling story. I do want to go back to something we talked about this morning, and I find this one interesting on a couple different levels, and mostly it's the response, and I would love to hear the response of, it's a tough thing. If you're a conservative, if you're a pro-business person, believe that with some minor constraints, the free market should be allowed to operate. And yes, before you waste your time texting me, I know, I'm not a, the free market is not, it's not as free, nearly as free as, you know, it once was. So that's agreed. No argument there. But it seems like constraints can be put on things when they don't suit the narrative of the day. And it could be the Second Amendment issues and guns. It could be sugary drinks. It could be a litany of things. And we somehow, because of a varying degree of its public safety, right, that we don't respect the rights of those businesses the way you would somebody who sold whatever, bouncy balls, although those are probably dangerous. It's something that's not dangerous. I don't, quilted sweaters, I don't know. It seems like if I ask you your opinion on, you know, what should the right of this business be to conduct its business, you say this. And then if I say, well, this other business, oh, well, if it's some kind of chemical, or if it's a gun, or if it's a motorcycle that goes fast or something like that, oh, well, then it changes, right? Then we have different opinions on it. And I think this is going to be borne out to some degree in this discussion about vaping. And this is, I'm not carrying anybody's water on this other than what I feel the founders wanted. And this question of if this vaping substance is so bad, which, by the way, as Dalton pointed out and Jace and others on the text line have, it looks like these few deaths that they have connected with vaping are people that are using some kind of black market THC vape thing and not the nicotine delivery vape thing. Okay. These are, it's like, we're kind of comparing apples and tangelos here on this. We'll set the basis here. Westwood One report here from Elizabeth Cohen about this vaping health warning.
The White House is calling for a ban on nearly all flavored e-cigarettes. These are the flavors that have started this epidemic among young people. Candy-like flavors, sweet flavors, fruity flavors, mint. That's what started kids vaping, and the White House says that they want to stop this.
Okay. So a couple questions. First of all, didn't we used to get told that the reason teenagers did stuff like smoking and drinking is they're trying to act like adults, they're trying to act older than they were, right? So is that not true anymore? But number two, I wouldn't be surprised if there is an allure to doing this vaping thing if the flavor is something that they want, some kind of candy flavors, I guess. But you, same time, you have laws that say you can't buy it, right? And if those are enforced, that's got to mitigate it to some degree. Now, there's always workarounds. Lord knows, there's always workarounds. But it's interesting. It's not just them coming out. Like, if the FDA or Surgeon General come out and say, this vaping stuff is killing you, right? Is killing you, is going to kill you right away, where it is a very dangerous substance, we're going to ban it. It'd be one argument there. But they're not saying that, right? They're saying, you can have this substance, but you can't have it in particular flavors. President Trump saying yesterday, putting e-cigarette manufacturers on notice, saying, we can't allow people to get sick and we can't have our youth be so affected, end quote. So the federal government is working on to finalize plans to remove flavored e-cigarette products from the market. Critics say flavored e-cigarette products such as bubble gum and, how about this one, Dalton? I don't know if we saw this one this morning. Unicorn milk. I don't know if I want anything called unicorn milk flavored cartridges, they say, are deliberately marketed towards kids. Should the new regulations go through, consumers would only be able to purchase tobacco flavored products, which, as Dalton pointed out this morning as well, is a flavoring because it's not actually tobacco. And yes, we had, if you want to contribute, we started a list on our text line at 343-0106. In lieu of unicorn milk, bubble gum, strawberry shortcake, Grape-alicious, whatever flavors that they're going to remove, what flavors would you add in that would only be of interest to adults, right? That would not tempt the kids. Those flavors would be out there, and the kids would not be tempted by them. As many people pointed out, flavors like fruitcake, buttermilk, spicy crawfish, a whole bunch of things, Brussels sprouts, a whole bunch of things on this list, raw oysters, extra dirty martinis, Lindberger cheese, liver and onions, bacon-wrapped asparagus. These things have been added to the list. Okay, so, and that's our, of course, our satire and our comic bent on it. But it is very specific to the federal government. Here, and President Trump is not an old line small government conservative. I'm sorry. It breaks a lot of hearts out there. Doesn't mean he's not doing, you know, things that are good for the country on a lot of fronts, but there's a lot of fronts where I question the creep of government. As government gets more and more involved, in this case, it's not just coming from Democrats, this is coming from Republican President Trump. So the American Lung Association issued a strongly worded warning against vaping yesterday, writing e-cigarettes are not safe and can cause irreversible lung damage and lung disease. No one should use e-cigarettes or any other tobacco product. Good for American Lung Association. American Lung Association, you want to run PSAs. If the science shows that, then let's do it. Let's get the information out there. At the same time, dissecting this issue and saying, okay, well, the vaping, we do the vaping, but you can't have these flavors. I mean, what if, okay, let's take it to the alcohol world for a second. Has anybody done this? Should we ban, what is Zima? Isn't that like a fruity flavored? What about Boone's Farm? What about some Country Quencher? What about the Grape-alicious flavor of Mad Dog 2020? I mean, do we do that? I mean, what about, I don't know the names of all the drinks, because what I drink beer. But, I mean, you go to the bar. I remember ordering these when I was a single man for young ladies, and they have a litany of different names out there. It's a reverse, upside down, fill in ladies' undergarment in the name. Those things were like candy. They were like candy drinks. So if the logic is here that the flavoring in these e-cigs has to be removed because it's too much for society to deal with and the children are going to be called to it, so then should we also move to, unless it's a scotch neat or a gin and tonic, if it's any other drink that has any kind of sugary appeal, then we should remove that. No, I mean, this is what I'm saying. The way this is being applied is not logical. It's reactionary. Once again, I have a teenager. My wife and I have threatened the teenager with certain death if she's even in the same room with one of these vaping devices. I have a dog in the sun. I have a teenager. I will have another teenager in some more years too. I get it. I don't want them smoking anything or vaping anything. At the same time, even if it's not popular, even if it's not the thing of the day is let's get on board and let's go after these folks, is that a time to remove the right of this business to have a flavor for their product? Is it okay? We're going to have tobacco and black licorice. And what's another old? And fruitcake. Other than that, you can have no other flavors because the temptation of the flavor will cause kids to break the law. That's where we are. You have to stop for a second instead of just what feels good at the moment and feels like, yeah, get them. And say, what are we doing eroding what has been the system in our country? Now, if you want to put every warning in the world on them and tell folks how dangerous it is and run the PSAs we'll run for you right here at the station, I'm on board. You're going to tell a business they can have this product, but they can't have it in this flavor or the other one? Somebody, I'll tell you what, let's open up a line for that. Somebody tell me why I'm wrong on this. 343-0106. Be right back.